I'm 5'11". I'm the king of the manlets.
I think one of the best things ever for me is probably killing someone for the first time.
Are you going to be, like, going in and out of a bad English accent this entire time?
I thought you were talking to me.
For the second time in the podcast history, there's about to be a fucking fight breaking out.
No, it's not going to be a fight. It means I'm just going to give someone a beating.
Don't touch that button! God damn it, I am so excited right now. We are about to announce something we've been working on extremely hard for the last 4 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's face it, mostly gentlemen, we are happy to finally announce Pepperbox TV. Pepperbox is kind of like Netflix, but for this community and for the creators in it. This thing is ready to go right out of the gate. So it's not just a shitty website. You can watch it on desktop, iOS, Android, most smart TVs.
Brandon, what's wrong with Nick?
I don't know, he looks fine to me. But imagine if Patreon YouTube, instead of, you know, YouTube us.
He's trying to say that we brought together some of the finest creators in this community and put them all together in one place without all the bullshit.
We're going to have everybody. Demolition Ranch, Kentucky Ballistics, Administrative Results, Donut Operator, Brandon Herrera, Unsubscribe Podcast, and everybody's favorite, Fat Electric.
Thanks, Nick.
And that's not all. You get all the YouTube videos, plus exclusive content, no
censorship,
and all ad-free.
What exclusives, you might ask? The Unsub Live documentary special is actually available right now. If you missed the live tour, this is a great way to see what the hell happened, because I don't fucking remember. We drank a lot.
And after that, we have another exclusive Range Day video from the big creator Range Day we all just finished up. I miss Nick.
Oh, shit, I'm back. Hi.
That is right. This is the official soft launch. And the best part of this soft launch, we have a limited time offer.
The first 2,500 people to sign up with Pepperbox will be able to get it for half off, so $3.99 for the life of your subscription.
So if you're as excited as we are, you should come prematurely. I mean, early.
That's it, everyone. Go to pepperbox.tv to sign up and start your 2-week free trial right away.
This is a what kind is this? This is your,
it's Bronson
50 pence. The rapper.
Yeah,
50 pence. So
it's becoming this.
God damn it, Eli.
It's becoming this. That's what I say. Call him 50 pence.
He takes credit for that joke.
And I've been tagging him on all the stuff now because he'll do this thing like my ex, like my baby mama has been sleeping with P Diddy or whatever. I didn't realize she was a small sex slave or something like that. And then it's like all this thing, and it'll be like # Branson Cognac. Like irrelevant. Oh, it'd be like all this blah blah blah, completely irrelevant. # Branson Cognac.
We see what you're doing, man.
That's the, when they say there's no such right thing now as bad press.
We found out that was a lie.
Oh, I have found out that is definitely a lie.
Bad press is not fun.
Yeah.
Companies have learned from that. A wheel company specifically. Thank you. That way we pop the top.
Are you going to be like going in and out of a bad English accent this entire
time?
Okay.
Yeah. What do you mean bad? You mean perfect?
Yeah. I thought you were talking to me.
Kind of.
You get a pass.
Are you just going to be going in and out of this thing? It's really annoying.
We know you're from Arkansas.
That skydiving trip. And then Matt was saying about, you know, you need to work on like an American accent. And I remember there's one, I was driving, again, we should be rolling with this. I was driving by myself in a car in Arizona trying to do American accents.
Let's hear it.
And I was just lying.
I want to hear that.
No, because I was just lying, like laughing, going, there's probably someone watching me just with their hands on the head going, please stop. Just don't do this.
I always think of that whenever I'm doing shit like that, or I'm singing like car karaoke shit. I'm like, my FBI agent hates me right now.
That's the whole thing is, I wouldn't have seen... I've sold that as well. If anyone, whether it be a foreign intelligence agency or now my own, is like listening to what I'm saying, and they're like, "God, oh no, he's putting Celine Dion again. Celine Dion's going on again." Or
like, you're just really into it.
They're like, "But can you?" There's a question to any feds who listen: would be, if someone's singing in a car, can you isolate them singing, or if you want to tell secrets in the car, just turn up your music really loud and talk to each other?
Or if feds out there in the comment section, let us know.
Or you could intentionally fuck with them, and 2 minutes into the song, you can just pause it and go, bomb, dirty bomb, napalm. And then restart it. Yeah. So they have to listen through the entire thing.
They have to continue like, oh, fuck. Cody, you ready to start this bitch?
Holy shit. When's the last time we did a podcast?
Dude, it's been I feel good because I'm like, it's been so long.
We had
feel refreshed.
All right, we doing it? Doing the thing?
Okay, we hold it up here.
3, 2, 1.
And then you take a sip. Man, that's just, oh, the lemonade vodka is good too. What?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Unsubscribed Podcast. I am joined today by Eli Doublefap, Mr. Christian Craghead, and Brandon Herrera.
And our boy, Bonnet Bopper Bader.
Bonnet Bopper Taters here, too. God, we haven't done a podcast in a freaking while, man.
Hey, everyone, we missed you. What's up, bros?
Yeah, we had so many just sitting there that we did for, you know, we had Range Day and we were building up all these podcasts because all of our guests were coming into town and
we've been backlogged a lot.
Yeah, we were just backlogged.
Now we get to relax and what a fucking episode to come in on. I'm so fucking stoked. I'm jonesing for this.
We've been trying to do this episode for like a year, I think. Know. We're just like, oh, we need to have Christian on at some point.
Christian,
A long time coming and I've always said I was going to do it and here I am, but.
Dude,
we're just waiting for the right moments.
And then he was talking in his weird accent. We're still trying to nail where it's from, but dude, we're like, stop talking, please, please, save this for the podcast. He's like, oh,
I still want to hear that American accent.
Dude, oh yeah, we can start with that. Here, you've done it before for me. Let me hear it.
No.
Okay. Come on, dude. We were talking about Guy Ritchie movies earlier. Yeah,
I can't do an American accent. Yeah, I'm working on it. The only thing I can do
I can't do a British accent, but I try. So try.
There was so much pressure. Maybe I'll slip it in later on. That's probably a better way of doing it.
You'll have to see. No, I had a British exchange student in high school that I went to school with that like the only thing he could say in his very forced American accent was he talked very high, like he was a very like high vocal range individual, but he would just go really deep. I would like a cheeseburger. Yeah. That was the only thing he knew.
I mean,
how to
let's
say.
Face it, if it's a British guy coming on exchange to, was it in America?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know if I know your intention on that sentence.
I don't like where this is going.
And no, but if it's a British guy doing an exchange into America, he must have come from money. So he probably wouldn't have had a regional accent like mine. And for the record, I'm trying to put on my best speaking voice here.
No,
because
don't.
If I went into my full regional accent, no one would be able to understand me.
So wait, is it regional accent, where are you from?
I'm from Northeast England.
Okay.
Do you watch Game of Thrones?
I do.
Game of Thrones.
I'm the King of the North.
I'm from Winterfell, basically.
Yeah, okay.
You're from Winterfell? That's awesome.
Because I wasn't the whole thing. Like they asked Sean Bean, like, hey, can you do like a Southern accent? And he goes, no. Yeah. So they're like, all right, well, you're all speaking like Northerners now.
Yeah. That's it. They're all like if I slipped into the regional Geordie, it's called accent, is super fast. And they're like, oop, and they go on like peaks and bursts. It's like burst transmissions. It's like, oh, I'll speak really fast.
Can we hear it?
And then I'll do something else.
Can you do just like a brief, hey, welcome to Unsubscribe. We're going to have a blast today.
Okay,
how would you say that?
Hey, everyone. Like, I'm just on regional. I'm on this podcast today with these canny dudes. They've got Eli, Brandon, an AK guy over here, Cody. I'm going to be really good. We're going to do a lot of stuff and keep up, stay tuned, and we're going to have a real laugh.
A root laugh.
You might need subtitles for that.
Done.
And I had to cut, and I completely cuffed that. So I didn't. That wasn't, as you can tell, pre-made Geordie.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you put in a lot of effort to speak real English with us here today.
Yeah.
Real American.
Yeah. Real American. Thanks for coming out to Texas.
Thank you very much, guys. And can I have some ranch with this? Can I get some ranch?
Man, we sound like dickheads. That's how we sound to you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Howdy, ma'am.
I love how like he just thinks Americans have manners.
I know. They just say yes, ma'am, all the time. Okay, yeah. We're doing the shot, which is this, because him.
It's
what the fuck is this?
It's the P. Diddy liquor. What is this?
No, it's not P. Diddy. It's the other guy. It's
50 pence.
You might have it. Oh, I see.
It's 50 pence.
Wait, what's does he own this brand?
Yes.
Dude, 50 pence. Really? Shout out to 50 pence.
Oh. Oh, so it's not the P. Diddler?
No,
it's the 50
the 50 cents.
I have not had cognac at one time in my life, so we're going to just tappy taps.
Oh, that's one of the things.
Yep, that's a thing.
That's one of the drinks of all time ever.
That's not awful. I don't think I'd like it again.
That is definitely a hangover. That is a lot of sugar. I can taste the sugar into that one.
Yeah, thanks, Christian.
That's all Christian.
Fuck, man.
See, that's like, your drink of choice?
No, yep. it's just something I was interested in trying. It's by 50 cents. It's his, I believe it's his cognac. And I just wanted to try it.
No, due to inflation, he's now 80 cents.
Right. I hate that. Brandon's training to be a dad.
That's great. That's great. But that's why
one day, Brandon.
Because I put my British spin on and called him 50 pence. But that's even better now. I like that inflation thing.
Dude, yeah, okay.
I'm training to be a dad currently. Yeah.
Mr. Christian, for all the beautiful individuals out there that don't know, he is Obi-Wan Kenobi among James Bond. What else? You've done. This man has lived a life, and it is truly an honor to have you sitting at the table. Like, and now that we're done jerking you off, I can't wait for this. All of us have been so fucking stoked to have you on to conversate. You're just a fascinating individual. It's like fucking... we've literally a whole year. We're like, okay, it's going to happen. One day it's going to happen. You're a busy dude and you just came stateside. Mm-hmm. How long ago did you move here?
In January. So that's where we are now, nearly May. So.
And then you're doing the entire process right now?
I will do eventually, yeah. But I'm a resident of Texas and Texas driver's license, Texas resident.
No, you need to just fly to Mexico and then come across the border illegally. That way you get a few grand and a cell phone.
That was a plan B, but if everything fails, try that.
Rocco's like, Christian? He's like, oi.
Como you're estas? Only allowed if you're coming here from Somalia.
Like, what?
But I'm told, again, I don't know if you can put this out, but it is actually a different thing. So depending on your passport is all the different rules, which I'm not speaking with authority here. So I'm not sure, but I did hear, for example, it's very, very hard to get into this country if you come from Cuba.
Yes.
Because they probably don't want you to give you a certain message or vote a certain way. So if you've got a Cuban passport, it's very hard to get into the country.
That's something I've heard as well. Yeah. On the borders. Yeah.
So it's same with as if you've got a British passport or a Canadian passport or whatever. It's different rules for different passports.
You were only allowed to come into the country from Cuba in the 80s if you were a criminal.
Yeah. You're the wrong kind of brown.
I done seen Scarface. I know how this works. Yeah.
That ain't no Mexican accent.
I know, our fucking resident Nazi here, Brandon Herrera.
Oh, yeah. Apparently.
Like, neo-Nazi Brandon Herrera.
Known neo-Nazi. It's like, known to who?
When I think clan members, I think of Mexican Brandon Herrera.
I had somebody at one of our political rallies. There was a local precinct chair, like, shook my hand. He's like, oh, if it isn't the brown face of white supremacy.
Like... This is the attack. So if you don't know, Brandon's been...
When someone says that to you, do you go, thanks?
Well, thankfully, thanks. That time I kind of assumed he was fucking with me. So
he's leaning into it.
I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm like, do I...
Yeah, you can't. Yeah. You can't do the nervous, like, oh. Well, I did that at one point.
I'll go, hey, I haven't got a brown face.
I'm quite Aryan, can you tell?
Before we get into this, I need to address something serious.
What's that?
If you're still placing bets with Two Finger Tony, you need to know that MyBookie is here to save your limbs.
MyBookie's been around for over 10 years, is trusted, and allows for bets on any sport on the planet.
All from the comfort of your home? No more trips to the shady bar on the other side of the town. I have so many jokes I can't say right now.
I've been to that bar. You don't want to go there. Seriously, though, if you're looking for your first sports betting experience or an improved sports betting experience, you have to try out MyBookie. Sign up today to receive your share of a generous welcome bonus using code UNSUB,
which gives you that house money to play with.
You know they say the house always wins? They're wrong.
Bet and play anything, anytime, anywhere
with MyBookie.
Place your bets now over at MyBookie.com.
MyBookie.com!
Code UNSUB! Mike Tyson actually has a quote. It's hilarious. It's interviews like, you're a liar, something, something. And he responded with, first off, I'm no liar. And you're like, whoa, bro, why did
that's
you?
That's, oh, God damn. That's a joke I was trying to get at. It's like, it was, that's probably better.
It's like, and it's an actual Tyson quote.
Yeah. I thought you were referring to my favorite Tyson quote, which is, quote, I'm going to f*** you until you love me. F***
Yeah. it's spinal. I broke my back. It's spinal. You're like, that this man is. I wouldn't. Fuck.
Oh, you're getting him on here.
He would be good. Dude, on dude. Oh, that would be amazing. I would love
that's to a do good. That. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, we should do it like. Because when's the fight? When's the Logan Paul fight? Because he might be on a media tour. We might be able to make that happen.
That would be an amazing fucking weird interview. Because I've looked up to that dude saying he's a fucking monster of a human. If you especially watch his. Like, that dude hit.
Yeah,
goddamn freight train! You just kill people, and then him in his prime—he's
like, and this is a like a compliment to him. He's an animal. It's like that's when you know when someone's got it in them, and it's a difference between there's someone who can be an athlete and a fighter. And I was talking to with a really good friend of mine who's a ex UFC fighter, Brendan O'Reilly, and we're talking about the difference between there's athletes and there's fighters who've just got that animal instinct who are just like it's on, and when it's on. That's it. There's only one thing that's going to happen. Like, and he, but he's like the OG of, not the OG of that, but he's the one that brought it to my attention. Because when he was in his initial prime, I was like 11, 12 years old. And I was like looking, going, yeah.
Dude, his stare downs. If you want terror, his stare downs. So technically you weren't allowed to wear black shorts unless you were the champion. He did not give a shit. He was like, I'm going to be the champion. I'm wearing out black shorts every time. And he would always wear black shorts out to his. That was his
it's
entire.
I like the whole. I think it's all part of it. And this is the beauty when someone does something naturally, it works better. And the fact that you know you have all these fighters coming out with all these like silk robes and doing all the dancing and stuff, and he comes out with just that towel with a little black ankle boots, like focused. Yeah, that to me is like a good image. It was like. And this is the, like, I'm repeating myself, but it wasn't image because it was actually natural. Yeah. And that's what makes it even more terrifying to your opponent is that he's not doing it for the vision. He's doing it because it's him. And that's why it works so well. And that's why if someone else tried to do it, it maybe wouldn't work.
And it sounds so cliche, but you can see it in somebody's eyes. Like, I remember the one time the guy, the dude at the boxing gym who fucked up my ribs before my fight is this just really big black dude who like just like right before we got in the ring together, it was his first time sparring at that gym. He had it in his fucking eyes when he was looking at me because we were just sparring. And he was looking at me like I just fucked his wife. And it was genuinely scary.
You're like, ah.
And so like he went to town. But you could tell that guy like however he grew up, he was a fucking fighter. And that is the difference. It was not a sport to him. He wanted to fucking kill me.
And then Tyson, when he would stare, if you want some of the best stare downs, Tyson's stare downs are absolutely terrifying. Because everyone else would move and he'd just be like this.
That's it. You need to come on here and then you need to do like a stare out. All have to try and do a stare out. And then he gives a judge who's the best stare out of you three.
I'd come too fast.
And then...
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah, this is why I said no eye contact. just like in prison, no eye contact.
Look away from it. It
doesn't count if it's...
Dude, some of his...
It doesn't count if it's in prison?
No, it doesn't count if you don't make
eye contact. Oh, I see, yeah.
Okay, we were talking about this earlier. The new Roadhouse movie.
Yeah.
The one line they didn't use that was the best line ever is, I used to... guys like you in prison. If Conor McGregor would have used that line, it's like, come, yeah, like that, yes, that's the most intimidating thing ever. And they didn't use it. Like, I wish Conor McGregor would have used that in the new Roadhouse.
My biggest complaint is that nobody ripped anyone's throat out.
Right.
I thought it was leading up to that.
I haven't seen it, and it's a spoiler. Did Conor McGregor get his throat ripped out?
No.
Did he get killed, even? Did they kill him?
I haven't watched it.
All right, we're not going to spoil that part, but nobody gets their throat ripped out and they don't say the guys like you in prison line, which those were the two big, like, what the fuck else is Roadhouse? Swayze's dead. You can't get him. But those are the only two things
you can
do. That's
a combat patch I want to fuck. If, like, you can walk out, but if you walked out with a patch that said, I used to fuck dudes like you in prison, I'm like, he's way more scary now. It's like that Shane Gillis bit where it's Vikings versus gay Vikings. Like, Vikings, they're just, you're not too worried. Gay Vikings, on the other hand, when they bring up that rainbow flag, you're like,
they're going to take our gold and our women. Gay Vikings. Fuck.
Hey, there he
you know, I'm holding back right now. I'm holding back. I'm
holding back at all. You're like, oh, man. Like, so this is amazing. Christian hasn't watched a single episode because he wanted this a raw experience
You're better off.
Let's go into it like raw. I don't want to watch like trying. All right, well, maybe don't say this. Maybe don't say that. Again, I'm using my judgment of, you know, I am being held back because I'm not rich enough yet. Like I said to you, and then once I'll come back on again when I'm when you see me back on this channel, it means I made a load of money and I made a load of money and I'll be able to say what I want.
He's actually just using us as like a Tinder profile. He's going to come back on 2 weeks from now. He's like, hey, by the way, if anybody's interested, I made a load of money.
Hey, what's up, dogs?
Yeah, they're crying with the money. Right?
Yeah, just patting your eyes. Throwing it's
the zombie side. Land with the $100 bills.
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Oh, this sucks so bad.
I hadn't cried like that since Titanic.
That's the gif I send people on Twitter. Yeah. When they get so mad at me and they're like, you're a piece of shit, you're a Nazi. It's like, oh, this is horrible.
I'm so sad that this one individual doesn't like me. Like, fuck. Okay, so we, all of us, especially Brandon, have went through basic training.
Shut up.
We've done military experience.
You have no idea how many, real quick. Fuck, because this is just a direct fuck you. I was just in, I believe it was Terrell County, on a campaign stop recently, and I had to answer a question from an unsubscribe viewer, clearly, who didn't know time and place. And we're in a group of like 30, 40 people that are there for like, actually, this is a real campaign stop. And they just hear, we hear that you're an honorary veteran. Would you like to comment on that? And so I had to explain the joke of my Purple Heart friend who started this joke out of spite for me because he hates me, I guess, that I have been running away from ever since, that he is just taken. Fuck you.
I didn't know how much root. I did not expect it taking that much of a root and read it. And then everyone else like, yes. Yes, weaponized. Okay, Brandon's a Medal of Honor recipient.
It has gotten, like, people have actually gotten to legitimate arguments on social media, like, oh, Tony's record is this? Well, Brandon, I don't know if you know this, but Purple Heart winner, Medal of Honor recipient. It's like, no, those are jokes, those are jokes, those are Eli
Brandon
jokes.
Brandon was with you in Nairobi, right?
Jesus Christ.
He was side by side.
And this is how lore gets written, and then somebody's going to ask me about it, being totally serious, and somebody who has no idea what this podcast is.
And then Kristen just writes him in the book. He's like, I wasn't even part of it.
I don't have a passport.
So you went through, though, you joined at 16, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is I didn't even know that was a thing. So that when you wrote that, you're talking about it. I didn't even know you could join at 16.
Yeah, you still can. And I've talked about this a lot, but you can join the British military when you're 16, but you cannot deploy on combat operations until you're 18.
So you're just doing training.
You do training and things. But again, it's kind of something I am proud of is I jumped out of a C-130 aircraft before I slept with a woman. So it was like, this is like a, you know, like stand up virgin soldiers. And it's like that thing. And I was like, jumping out of C-130s and
before jumping in,
being like a ranger, if you like.
Yeah. Your first jump on a C-130 was when you were 29.
It was a few weeks ago. See what happens?
Yeah, that was instant karma. I try to throw in the slightest bit of shade and I immediately embarrass myself.
Yep. Well, dang it.
Well, time to fucking myself.
Yourself.
I thought I knew where that was going. I'm like, no.
Oh, God.
Sorry, I think in memes now.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm sorry.
It's good.
Wow.
Thankfully, Ryden. Thanks, Connor. He made this out to my son, too, Ryden. Sometimes just one wolf can make all the difference. Best C. Which, truly, thank you for this, brother. This is fucking amazing, and you ruined it, brother.
You are making me feel like such a piece of shit right now. Holy fuck.
My only one of... I go to sell it at, like, the road show in 50 years. They're like, it would have been worth $50 million, but there seems to be booze spilled on it. I'm like, that means it was worth more. That was... Technically,
that was president.
Yeah, president. Oh, yes. He spilled it, so it's worth more, right?
What is that? Future former disgraced congressman.
So, you were jumping out of planes at At what age?
17.
That's fucking
yeah, what's good. The drinking age?
18. Over there? 18.
So you Smart. Were doing this gnarly training and you couldn't even drink.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it was a, like for me, it was a lifelong ambition. Wanted to do it. And I was just, but we talk about focus. I was just wanted to do that. And to me, it wasn't, that's all I wanted to do.
So what was the train up leading? Like basic training going through it for us is like your 9 weeks and then 4 weeks, I think, for infantry.
So in the, for me, we had this thing and I was the last platoon as in this format was called junior para. And junior para was six months of being a junior soldier in the parachute regiment, which is the equivalent of the Ranger regiment over here. And it was just six months of brutal training, and it was brutal. And I look back at it and it's like, do you know what? That's kind of badass. And the instructors were really, really good. But it's a different world. Like if you tried to do that stuff now, then people would be like, yeah, that's brutality.
At like, 16 and 17, that's ridiculous.
And it's like, and one of the things, I feel in some ways feel sorry for some of the instructors. Because after, I think it was about week four when we started what we call tabbing, which is rucking, we'd be doing a ruck march every Saturday morning.
Real quick, any little phrase or any word that you guys have, like a what would you call that?
Term, like slang term. Slang term or phrase.
Could be interpreted as
rucking.
No, what was the term?
So we call it as tabbing.
Tab, yeah. Like literally any other British slang in my mind is immediately
yeah, you're like,
we're shagging.
Yeah,
we're tabbing.
Yeah, I tabbed her later.
Yeah, like, oh, that girl down at the pub. Yeah, no, I tagged her last week. Yeah.
Right in the boot. I know British. So you did rucking, yeah. Which is, if you don't know, ruck marching. You put on a 35 to 60 pound bag and you walk at a very fast pace. You're my height, so you probably hated rucking.
No, I loved it.
You it's fucking like weirdo.
Because that's why I wanted to, you know, for me, it was what sets the tough guys apart from the normal guys. It's like, that's what we do. I want to do that on a Saturday morning, go rucking, do that. And then throughout the week, it was just brutal physical conditioning. Then that finished after 6 months, and then it went into normal training. Not normal training, but training for the parachute regiment. They have like a test called P Company, which has changed a number of times over the last few years. But it used to be really hard. And but that was like kind of like hell week type thing. And it's like it's a hard test. And there's a really good, if you ever go on YouTube, and a cutting edge documentary called P Company, look at that. Was like the P Company, kind of what I did. And then you go into they do parachute training, which is just the round parachutes. And then you go into your parachute battalions. And for me, it was like a great honor to serve in the parachute regiment. It was 10 years after the Falklands War, and the parachute regiment played a key role in the Falklands. So,
can you break in more on the Falkland War?
Like, it was just a war that happened in 1982. The Argentinians invaded the small island in the South Atlantic, and then a task force was sent to get them out of there. And so it was like conventional warfare for a few weeks.
It's one of the few instances, I'm going to go into like a little bit of like weapon nerd history. It's one of the few instances where the same service rifle was used on both sides of a war.
Right.
So you had the foul on both sides.
I might be mistaken. I want to say this in like a five eye sort of view, like, but it's kind of like the last like force on force war where you had aircraft fighting against each other, where you have like a naval force fighting against each other. It wasn't just going in like a counter-terrorism war.
Yeah.
I know people with all the, again, Gulf War veterans might be getting hot around the collar.
That was a 3-day event of us just but it was
kind of
people.
like a kind of force on, like, to my knowledge, it was like a force on force. Like
the other one might have been maybe the Balkans.
I don't know that one.
Like the Yugoslav Civil War.
Well, not really for us.
The UK. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what I mean from like a UK, US, you know, like
that. Okay.
When it's like back to the old, whether you've got the carrier groups and submarines, and do you know what people think war is about? That was like the last in my, I've got a lot of combat experience, so I think I'm allowed to say all this. But it was the last, like, I don't want to say real war because, like I say, I've done lots of fighting and lots of killing and stuff like that. But, like I say, force on force, so you've got aircraft against each other, submarines in the water, naval carrier groups, soldiers against soldier. Like what people think war is.
Yeah,
about. Like that was like a clear cut.
You black know and white. The bad guys.
But black, it's black and,
black and white.
Like black I think and the white term war. Is like near peer warfare, like where you have.
Yeah, and again, for all the there might be history buffs and people like cursing me now or whatever, but that to me, but it was a and it was true grit. It was the Prime Minister of the UK at the time, Margaret Thatcher, was like, yeah, we're not going to just. It's thousands of miles away, but we don't care. This is British sovereign territory. We're going to get you out of there and. Sent down a task force, lots of different units, regiments, lots of people died, especially in the naval side when anti-ship missiles striking ships and killing hundreds of people, but in one strike. But it was it really raised national pride at that time, and people, I hope they still are very proud of the Falklands War. I know I am, and it was one of the big motivators for me to. Outside of media and things, but it was the thing that 10 years later I was joining the parachute regiment, which was the regiment to join in the British military.
And what year did you join?
1992.
Okay.
God, you are old. Yeah, you're the. I'm.
Did you just say? Did you just fucking call him old?
I did.
Damn, you are old.
You, I always forget because you look fucking good for your goddamn you really age, do. Bro.
That was before I was born. For context.
Yeah, you joined the military before Brandon.
That's incredible, Jesus.
Oh my God!
I was over here doing the math on the Falklands War. I'm like, wait a minute.
Brandon's like, how old are you? Yeah, because I always forget you're.
I would have thought you were like 40.
Yeah, on the dot. Like you look like.
I'm 48.
Yeah.
Fuck, no, you don't look 48. Man. You look 40, like he was saying, on the dot.
Yeah, you fuck. Ooh, look at me. I'm good looking. And I'm a badass. Ooh, I'm well spoken and have a British accent. Go fuck yourself.
It's like, oh, okay. Can I tell you a story about this motherfucker right here?
About right, me.
We go, No. So, like Heather and I go up to, we're up at Staccato. You know, like I was like 2 months ago, something like that. We're hanging out at Staccato, and and we're like having a good time. And you're like, Cody, good to see you. What's up, bro? Good to see you. And then you turn to Heather and you're like, my darling, it's good to see you. I was like, Christian, save some pussy for the rest of us, man.
I said,
chill out.
I was like, hello, darling.
Fuck, man. All the girls, like, even Sav, you're like, so, like, Sav, we're going to go eat at my house after. And Sav's like, so excited. She's like, oh. And I'm like, God damn it. And you're respectful. And it's hilarious, too, because Sav will show some cleavage at times. God bless her soul. And when he was talking to her, he's like, hey, how you doing? Like, he just put his hand here. I'm like, it's fucking hilarious and respectful at the same time. I'm like, ah.
Is that not a joke, really?
No, it's a joke.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's a joke. Yeah.
I'm like, ah. I wouldn't put it past you.
Right, it's like a kind of thing to go like that. It's like,
he did it still.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah,
what
he
I
was
meant.
Doing like, it yeah, as yeah. a joke. Yeah,
I didn't put them on. I didn't put my hand on her. I was like,
yeah, I was like, man, so respectful. So respectful.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh,
hi,
Cody.
Wow.
Good to meet you. Yeah, right.
What's up, dude?
Hey, homie.
How are you? So you joined 8 years, what did you say, 8 years or a decade later from the wars?
Gotta love the whiplash of this podcast. I don't.
The Falklands War was 1982. 1992, I joined the parachute regiment.
And then what was, how many miles, when you were ruck marching, how far were you doing?
It would build up, but the standard towards the end was the 10-miler standard, which was, I hope it still stands, is what you carrying a ruck of 35 pounds. Not, and then a weapon, and it's 10 miles in 1 hour 50.
Holy shit, so, you are cooking. Holy shit. So yeah. EIB, for anyone, like that, you have to do a 12-mile ruck march under 3 hours, if I remember right. And that, like, is it three?
So the parachute regiment 10-mile standard, which we eventually, so we didn't start off in like week four, but towards the end, that was what we were building up to. Is the 10-miler on P Company is 1 hour, 35 pounds in 1 hour 50.
3 hours for the EIB. So expert infantryman's badge, you have to do it under 3 hours with the exact same loadout. Doing fucking just 2 miles left in 1 hour 50 is ridiculous. Yeah, like you are stepping the fuck out.
You're not just walking.
And P Company, like I said, has changed a lot. But after the Falklands War, they tweaked it again to make, because that's what happened. The task force landed on one side of the island and then marched to the other side and then fought a battle at the end of it. and Two Power did two battles, so they did a battle at the start and then towards the end, and then another one at the other side. So the Tweak P company, I believe, after the Falklands, but yeah, it's a tough test, and that's still, again, it is disappointing that they do change the standard and change the tests, but the core concept of it still remains the same: of paratroopers land on one location and then move as fast as they can on foot to another point to then fight a battle after it. So that's the concept. And for those people who think they shouldn't do it or don't know why they do it, that is why they do it, and long may it stay that way.
That is absolutely weird. I don't know if you guys, like, Brandon, if you want my, and you're literally like my height, 1 inch taller, so you're like 5'10"?
Yeah.
Yeah. Stepping out.
You're 5'9"?
Yeah. I am.
Are you?
You're what, 4'10" now, according to the
internet? Yeah, according to the internet.
Like, I was showing him, like, a little Brandon images.
Like, I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. I'm 5'10". What?
I'm like, what?
Are you really 5'9"?
Yeah. No, oh, is, yeah, because I know.
Maybe I'm just thinking of, like, the internet's meme of you that you're like that much shorter.
It's the same thing as me. Like, so again, it's been brought up, and like Evan Haver brought this up, and everyone brings it up. It's like, and I say I'm 5'10", and everyone's like pulls that face and goes, "Really?" I'm what? I fucking know how tall I am. It's like, I know how tall I am. I didn't lie about it. I didn't say yeah. And like when I said when I stand up straight, my back against the wall, measured, it's 5'10".
69
inches. I've been that height since I was 16 years old.
69 inches.
Yeah. And then nice. And then and then but people pull their face off. Really? I'm like, why is it when someone says about the height or whatever, go, really? I'm like, what do you think? I'm lying. Why would I lie? Why would I, like, say that to you? I mean, I get it if you're putting on your profiles or whatever, like 6'4" or whatever.
Yeah, getting that tendy.
Bro, Brandon woke up and chose violence against you today.
I know, I like it. Well, holy, I would understand shit. It. It's the veteran thing. I would always choose violence against me. I would wake up and be like,
I have so much fucking ammo in reserve for you right now.
I'm just quite pleased that you said, like, oh, 5'10". I was like, oh, thanks. I actually am that. Rather go, oh, you're about 5'8". I'm like... Really?
Fuck you. I was like, yeah.
All right. First of all, fuck everyone. I'm 5'11". I'm the king of the manlets. Like,
you're that 1 inch too short.
Like,
you're
like, you fucking bitches. Tinder sucks for me.
But you're 6'2" when you stand on your wallets.
Exactly.
I have never heard that. I love it so much.
I like that. And that's another bonus about living in Texas. Is like, I wear cowboy boots a lot all the time. And they've got big heels. So actually, do look like 5'10".
Even yours are really big because they're like platformers. I'm just... Yeah. You look like a go-go dancer. He's just walking with these giant boots. I'm like, huh, didn't expect that.
Like President Macron of France with his little booster feet.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, that's still one of my favorite videos of President Trump. Like, just walking out in front of all the world leaders. I am the one, the way you're trying... Like pushing them out of the way. Just, oh,
yeah, this is my...
America's here.
So, that is, yeah. I mean, yeah, that is good, isn't it? It's just like...
Connor, you ever heard about tushy?
Oh, you mean this?
Did you know just wiping your butt with that dry-ass toilet paper just smearing poop around?
With Hello Tushy, you have a fresh stream of water spraying directly on your butthole, eliminating adult skid marks,
itchy buttholes,
and the risk of spreading pink eye.
No amount of furious wiping can give you that shower-fresh confidence of washing with a Hello Tushy bidet. It'll change the way you think about wiping after a spicy dump. Now, the reason I like a bidet is because it reminds me of Japan.
Plus, the cleansing feeling is amazing. Let's talk about the one you can take on the go.
You can clean that booty hole on the road now? Oh!
The at-home butthole cleaner is amazing.
Connor, you mean the 3 nozzle settings? It gives you And every Tushy bidet comes with a 30-day hassle-free return and a 12-month warranty.
It's that time of year for spring cleaning, and what better place to start than your butthole? Stop wiping until you bleed, and join the 2 million butts who've already switched to Tushy. For a limited time, our listeners get 10% off your entire order when you use code UNSUB at checkout.
That's promo code UNSUB.
What was your least favorite part of training up before getting into, like, from basic training to the actual, like, regiment? What was the least part?
Like, inspections and things, you know, like locker inspections and making, you know, like, I make them better every day. Like, not, and I don't want to drop it like some like McMakey bed, Navy SEAL kind of thing.
You have a lot of animosity against SEALs. It
sounds like. I just said like McMakey bed. That generally, like, I make your bed every day, and I do make my bed every day.
I thought you had animosity toward Jordan Peterson. The clean your room.
I do that.
I admit, but you know, like making the bed blocks, and I think that's not allowed anymore, and like polishing everything and making everything neat and tidy. I get why you do it, but I just didn't like it.
Well, when was the first time you ever deployed? What year?
1993.
Okay.
Jesus fuck, dude.
So, where?
Why do you look
Northern,
so good?
Northern Ireland.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so now we're really fucking curious.
I don't think we should talk about Northern Ireland, not because there's anything, it's just because I'm going to do it. I would do it in justice. And I don't know, it's very complex counterinsurgency. But yeah, so it was, yeah, no, I went to Northern Ireland, I was 18 years old. I was 17 when I flew out, and then 18 when I went onto the ground. And then I did there 2 years then and left. And it's not really much to talk about. It was the main conflict that was going on for the British at the time. And... but it's a very super complex situation. Right.
There's a lot of the situation. I mean, war is a complex thing. It used to be just like, I want that land. This is it. Now it's way more deep.
Especially that, since it was technically a domestic deployment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little convoluted, to say the least.
That's crazy.
There's a reason why Dave and Cho are not here with us today.
So training up until going over, how long were you in before you got selected to try out for the SAS? Or did you like step in and be like, hey, I'm doing that?
In my mind, even before I joined the army, I wanted to do it. But it was such a bold thing to think. I didn't say it out loud. But and it was one stage at a time. And then I was going to try it when I was young, really young, like 21. And then I got persuaded to go into the Pathfinder platoon, which is like a force recon type unit.
Lots of land nav going into Pathfinder.
Yeah, it's all a very, very tough selection again. But did that, and then I tried to get on three times to get into the SAS. And I failed one injury and then another situation. And then eventually I got in, and it was just...
When was that?
In 2006.
Okay.
I want to rewind now to the Pathfinder, because what is the training going into that? Like that, how long is one of those road march? Because
that's also wild. 14 years later.
That's
dedication. But that's kind of the average. I don't know what it is now, but they say that they are, like when they do the math, it's like average age is a lot younger than what it is, but it's not the average, because you might get one person who joins when they're young and like say 21, 22, that brings the averages down. But the real average of people joining the like a T1 unit is around about 30, 31 years old. That's what it used to be. So they've done typically 12-year service. Again, it might be younger now and things, but from what I always used to see and then being an instructor, would be you'd get like two groups. You'd get guys who are about 24, which was the first time I did it, was when I was 24. You get the 24-year-old group, and then you get the like 30-something group. And typically the guys who were in the 30-something group were the ones who filled it when they were 24. And that's kind of like the bracket, age bracket. Going back to your question about Pathfinders, it was just a fast and furious selection course of 6 weeks, but very, very tough. Very
intense,
tough indeed.
Intense.
Yeah. And that was just again, getting into that unit was really good. When I was in the unit longer than average, and it was a catch-22. I was in this military unit where I kind of didn't want to be in it, but it was better than being in a standard unit. It was because it was a special unit. But the first year in that unit was probably one of the best years of my life. It was so good. And again, I've spoke about this before, and then all of a sudden they decided to get a sergeant major, and then things got worse. And then it was just like, yeah. And it's not knocking those sergeant majors. It was what was like this little tribe of guys who were like super soldiers, super fit, and keen and having a laugh and doing good stuff. Then you get a sergeant major and it becomes sort of real again. And I didn't like it very much after that. But I did my first combat leadership when I was in Pathfinders, and that was really good and a great honor for me. And a lot of the guys who the team that had 3-4 Delta was a 6-man team. And most of the guys, I think 4 of the 6 all ended up in the SES.
No shit.
And then maybe five, can't remember if, like, but they all ended up in the end. It was a good team and a good group. But yeah, so it was like the best of times, worst of times.
When you say it was like the best day or the best year of your life, were you just like, holy shit, this is fucked?
Oh, I don't know. Dope. I think one of the best things ever for me, and it was probably killing someone for the first time. And I don't say this as a psychopath or a sociopath or whatever path, is you got to think about it like this. When we're kids, we're playing soldiers.
100%.
And here's a funny thing. Because, again, cancel me, don't cancel me. Did you play soldiers? I'm using the PC term now.
Yeah,
you're running around shooting things.
You find that right stick.
I don't know what you call it.
As soon as you're 7 years old.
You mean cowboys and Indians?
Yeah, so there's cowboys and Indians. We used to call it like Japs and English. And now people are like, what?
Japs and English, really?
Yeah.
No shit, that's what, wow, I didn't know.
Because we're still living in the 1970s. We're not that far away from World War II.
Do you have the Scotch tape?
Yeah. That's wild. Well, in my mind, because we don't even call it that here in the U.S.
So there's different, there was three terms. You could play cowboys and Indians, you could play armies, or you could play Japs and English. But the most common, if you were running around with guns, was Japs and English.
Because I've never heard of that. Like Japs and English is like, the European theater was way more prominent for the UK.
Well, not necessarily, because we had the empire then. So there was still I think, especially if, again, I don't know this for certain, but regional areas of the UK, even when you go to working man's clubs, some of the drinks are a bit obscure. I can't remember what the drink is, but in Burnley in Northern England, they have this really like obscure drink because the local battalion in World War II were based in North Africa. So they picked up a taste for this like liqueur. So it became like a tradition. People would have that with a beer and a chaser of whatever it is. So if you have like a local regiment who spent most, like if you think of 80% of the town may have, of the fighting age males went to Burma or in that theatre of combat when they come back, that's why they're calling it Japs and English or whatever, and armies. And
okay, so not like specific like World War II Pacific theater, but like other ventures.
No, World War II specific.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
So,
okay.
So it's all like because it's all, if you think about when I'm young, like you could think the council estate street where I lived, it's like the street of, say, 100 houses, not even that. But you could probably say that more than 50% fought in the war. At that age, because my grandma and everyone else is still there and they're still kicking it and they all did their bit. So that would definitely perfuse into the rest of the kids and everything. Yeah. So it's that saying stuff, and whether it be even in slang, like for example, in UK, and maybe it's died out a bit now, probably be making a resurgence because of immigration, but the like a term of...
why are you laughing, Eli?
It's a term for women, like a slag term for a woman is a bint. Especially in Northern England, saying, oh, a couple of bints. Well, the Arabic for woman or girl is bint. So because that's, and to shoof, they say, oh, give us a shufti at that. That's like a slang term. But the verb in Arabic to look is to shoof or something like that. So it's from all this activity in World War II, and they come back with slangs.
Funny, that's come back around recently.
And they asked us, but even so, the parachute regiment is something I still to this day, and I don't think they teach it anymore, because I remember when I was in the SES, this was probably 2012, asking guys who just got into the SES from the parachute regiment, do you know what the regimental battle cry is? Do you know what battle cry is?
Oh yeah, I do. You have to do it.
Battle cry, for those who, when you're like charging the enemy, scream something like
dude, show me your war.
Yeah, so it's a battle cry, but the parachute regiment has a regimental battle cry, and it's kind of a twisted joke, but it's Waho Muhammad. Waho Muhammad, and you'd like, and used to see old guys from World War II, if you saw you wearing a parachute regiment shirt, they'd be like, Waho Muhammad. And you'd be like, and you'd know that guy was like a World War II vet or a veteran of the parachute regiment.
Where'd it come from?
Because when they were fighting the North African campaign, all the, like the locals would always go Waho Muhammad to them as like a greeting. Yeah. So they go Waho Muhammad. So they took it as a sick joke. So when they were bayoneting Germans, they'd be going, Waho Muhammad, as we're bayoneting them and stuff.
It's fucking hardcore.
But if it's always
how are you doing?
So it's like a black joke. It's like black humor, because that was the normal greeting that everyone, the locals and everyone say. But it became, I got taught that, is there's a regimental battle cry and it's Waho Muhammad. Wahoo Muhammad. And but that's what they turned it into, a joke, like saying Bayonet, and people were now storming machine gun bunkers shouting Wahoo Muhammad. Like,
did you have family that fought in the North African campaign?
No. Oh, but okay. That's where so another interesting fact about the Parachute Regiment is their nickname is the Red Devils. And it's not because they wear maroon berets. It's because in North Africa, the sand's red, similar as in Kenya and other places. It's got red sand. So when they were after fighting, they'd be covered in red dust. And the Germans said that the paratroopers were coming at them like red devils.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fucking gang. Dude, that's when you know you're making an effective, is when you're called like Red Devils because the way you look coming into battle. Yeah. Because
and it's not been in the name of the Marine Corps, the American Marine Corps, the Devil Dogs. Like, it's a similar situation.
I fucking love that shit so much.
So, yeah, and I don't know what the original, we've come on a long journey, but what was the question?
I don't even fucking know. I just got a history lesson, and all the audience is like,
well, I hope they
get it. These motherfuckers are autistic and shit, so they're just like,
just happy.
But there's people, what I hope as well is people in the UK are watching this, and people in the Parachute Regiment, because I think some of this hasn't been taught anymore. Maybe it has been, and people will comment about, I'm sure, but this is what we used to get taught, and it's something I was fiercely proud of. It was like regimental and regimental history, both SAS and the Parachute Regiment. I didn't get taught when I was in the Parachute Regiment stuff. I got taught in the military, but the SAS stuff I knew before I joined, and it's quite sad, you know, when any sort of history dies away.
Oh yeah,
whether it be positive or negative, because we learn from it and we evolve and we. And a lot of it is a good example. Again, is like, well, never really talked about it. But it's such a good example of like black humor. Is we're going to have this regimental battle cry which will survive longer than most of the people who fought the campaign did. Well, it does now, because I'm bringing it back to life. Is Wahoo Muhammad, and it's having this sick joke of when you're banging it in someone, going like a cheery thing, going, hey, how is it doing? Like Wahoo Muhammad.
If you need just an idea for you, if you did a shirt that just said that,
yeah.
That's a fucking dope ass shirt. I guarantee you. Like,
but that was a nice thing.
The Chinese are already fucking on it right now because of this right here. They'll be linking it in the fucking Twitter bio.
Hello, Muhammad. Hello, Muhammad. Sorry.
That's going to be the new the Unsub shirt.
I do accents all the time.
Well, Muhammad.
The Unsub shirt is Ooh Woo Muhammad.
Yeah. But there's a thing, because I remember a friend of mine, he was doing some extra work when he was on leave in the Parachute Regiment. He had a vest on. A lot of guys in the Parachute Regiment have like the Parachute Regiment cap badge tattooed on them. I don't have mine covered. And he's doing some work on a building site, and some old guy was like, "Whoa, Muhammad!" And it's like, because he saw the tattoo, he saw the thing, and it's like, "Oh, yeah, it was."
Dude, it's one of those experiences. Ah, man, I love like just the lore behind like history in general and learning about it. I know. Also, I was talking to Fat Electrician Nick today. Hi, Nick. He actually wants to do just a video on you, how he does his history breakdowns. He's like, ask him if I can do a history segment on him.
Yeah, because I had no idea that your lore, so to speak, with the British military went back that long.
I would suggest no clue. Yes.
I mean, there's lots of like traditions and like customs that go back hundreds and hundreds of years, older than this country. Mm. They're just, yeah. But
sorry, we don't hold really that 1770s bit against you, by the way.
No, I don't. And then this
is several year period was a little awkward, but aside from that, we've all been very good allies.
Like this is where I show my true colors, and that probably that's the right term for it. Is the so I remember someone commented on social media saying, "Hey, I'm glad." I think it was a Black Rifle post or something, and someone said, "We're glad you weren't around in 1776."
Yeah,
and 100%. I said, "Well, I'm trying to become an American, so I was probably a turncoat anyway, so it doesn't matter."
my so favorite probably, post I think ever on social media was yours. It was July 4th, and you said, "Happy Treason Day."
Yeah, all right. Jericho, he's a good friend of mine. He gave me that t-shirt, and I was like, I thought I'd wear it. But I love again. Hopefully, people could see the joke in it. I'm there, and I've got a cup of coffee. And holding an assault rifle, going, happy treason day. It's like that was, I hope people got the joke of it.
Yeah.
But that's what I lead into is like some of the stuff like my logos and in some of the products are doing. My favorite one or one of my favorite designs is I call it the Blackbeard Boarding Party, and it's the skull of the Blackbeard pirate but it's got a hatchet and a flintlock crossed. And it's like, I say it's like, because that's what it's got, like 1770s vibe to it, of like being a, going against the authority with flintlocks and hatchets.
Yeah.
I love it.
So.
Kind of like then, that right there.
Almost like this. When did you get this design from?
This is the...
Oh, this is yours. Like,
yeah, this is... So this design is... So I was wearing a patch with a Blackbeard flag, which is kind of like this.
Yep.
And then we just tweaked this. So this is the design of me running into the hotel, an area of the hotel. This like iconic photograph. Yeah. And then we tweaked it to make it look like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's up.
Yeah.
Now
it's up and it's got like a chalice in one hand.
Yeah.
And then we just sort of twisted it. My good friend Travis. I had the idea with it. And then... Because I'm not talented with artwork and stuff like that. And then I get people, old friends of mine, supportive to like say, hey, I've got this idea. Can you do this, tweak that? And then he uses his expertise to then tweak it and
fine tune it. Now, before we go into the story, a lot of people have heard, and I've actually tried to not hear as I'm going in as new as possible going into the big one, but. You have like the Ministry of Defense. You actually carry around something particular for that MOD, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bring it out.
I've got it. It's over there.
Oh, hold on. Never mind. Don't bring it. Watch this magic trick.
Connor.
Oh, magic. Connor. Big shout out to King Trout.
So, I'm sorry. Were we not supposed to say your first name again?
No, I don't care.
Okay. So I've got my company.
I already fucked that up.
I've got a company called the Ministry of Defense, and it's this company that's evolving. Right now, we're selling some merch, which is like official branded Chris Craighead MOD t-shirts and baseball caps and other bits and pieces. The other thing we're doing are these. We call them Armor Upgrades, which is a ESV English Standard Version Bible, and we're just launching some of these. Again, this is one of my logos. It's cross, but says "Send Me" in it. And the whole idea is from 1999, I carried a Bible in my equipment, and that same Bible all the way through till I retired. So it's in a lot of combat operations. Yeah. And the line I said it was in there. And did I pull out and read it? I don't think I even, I did read it initially because there's still tabs in it. I read a lesson in church from that Bible because I had the big grand Bible in church. And I said to the padre at the time, I don't want to use that Bible. I want to use the one I carry on missions. So I had this little tiny little Bible and reading out of that. And it's like this whole thing about, you know, like, did I need it? Like on my belt, I used to carry a pistol, fighting knife or a hatchet, hand grenade, spare magazines. Did I need them every day? No. But like that Bible, it was there if I did need it. So that's why. And the other thing as well is people say, oh, Bibles or whatever, and it doesn't really matter about your religious sort of viewpoint. Yeah. Because one thing I did say, and there's lots of stories in this in history of guys who used to scoff at me for being like a practicing Christian or whatever. And then we're getting to ready, for example, to invade Iraq. And then the padre leaves a load of crosses out on the table. The next morning, they're all gone. And like, all right, so all these people who were like, oh, religion starts all wars and yada 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 and everything. Sometimes you need every bit of help you can get, and that's what they reach into it. So I like to think that people will buy even if they're not going. You don't have to go to church or you don't have to be like a practicing Christian. It's like I say, that's why I call it the armor upgrade.
Yeah,
it's there if you need it, and if you don't need it, then that's good in some ways.
And real talk, even if it's not like something that you wholeheartedly believe in, there's a lot of wisdom in there.
Yeah, and I call it the handrail.
A little bit of history.
Yeah.
And it's the...
One would say, yeah.
I call it the handrail because that's what it is. It's like, it's like when you're walking in the darkness or you have that handrail and you can, that's what it's there for. You can use it 100% and live by it 100% and like, or it's just there if you need it. And when the journey's steeper or the journey's darker, the handrail's there. Mm. Because if you don't hold it, there's a chance that you get drawn into the darkness. And the other thing as well from that handrail is there are things out there that's going to drag you into that darkness. So that's why I call it the handrail. You know, use it as you need it, but it's there if you do need it.
And I think it really ties in with like the main story, because you have some amazing segments. I know talking to Shane and you earlier about it. I'm like, it's so dope. But before that, because we can tie this in beautifully, you're driving.
Oh, jeez.
My boy.
So.
It's one of my favorite
stories. I'm just going to warn everyone now, things are about to get ugly. If you're a Texan watching, stand by. I'm coming for you all. And just like,
that feels like a very valid threat right now.
Ow, I feel threatened.
That's but, not a letter, okay, that's a threat.
So come on, I'll open it to you. Comment on my driving.
So we were in Arizona doing skydiving, jumping out of planes. I was never done this. You've done it a whole bunch. How many jumps have you done?
I haven't done many since then, but it's over 1,000 jumps.
Oh, God. So you're looking at Eli, you're like...
We got King Trout right now, just like, what the fuck?
You're looking at Eli, you're like, oh, we're not getting shot when we land? All right.
I'm deathly fucking terrified because I haven't jumped out of shit. And then I go in the tube, I look like a bag of shit flapping around. I'm like, how do they control themselves in the air? And then, like, fucking Christian's in there, he's like, okay, like doing flips, rotating. You're like, fuck you, you British fuck. What the fuck? But driving, we had this like 30-minute drive, 20-minute drive.
Yeah.
And now...
We'll hear his story, then I'll tell the truth.
So, and you don't have many big vehicles like trucks like Americans do, correct? Like overseas.
Everything... Like everything is smaller over there. It's just
like, everything's bigger in Texas, yeah,
but it doesn't matter. About, anyway, go on. You know, carry on. I'm already feel myself getting really defensive.
So, fucking homeboys driving for us. We just drive back and forth, and it's an open desert road. We're like going over there, and I look over. I'm like, bro, fucking relax, dog. We're just in the middle of nowhere. He's like. Like death knuckling the steering wheel. I was like, relax. He's like, I am relaxed. I'm like, doesn't look like.
So for the record, death knuckling means having two hands on the steering wheel.
I mean, you've got white knuckles in your veins.
Like, probably, but that's
bro, in West Texas, it is like an act of God for me to have one hand on the steering wheel.
And that's the thing is people like driving. Like there's a friend of mine. I'm going to drop his name. He's called Tony. And he used to drive, he's like sat like that, and he'd be like talking to you with one arm on the wheel, like drinking a cup of tea or something, and going, yeah, and like eyes on the road, please, Tony. And he's like, what? And he's like sat like not even legs forward, like with one like probably the edge of his foot on the accelerator, going like that, yeah. But I drive
and all the road bumps in between. Yeah,
I drive with two hands on. I normally just it's a thing, and people will joke and go, no, you just look like you've passed your test because I drive with two hands on the wheel, and I like. And I take them off to do maneuvers, and most of the time, got two hands on the wheel, and that's just the thing.
And yeah, I love how you're already like, ooh, stop telling this.
So it might be a thing, because one thing I do notice when people take photographs when I'm not looking, I've got my like fist clenched, which is probably there's some psychology behind that about going, but I'm looking at, and I'm like, oh, when they're off guard, I'm like, and then, sorry, on guard, I'm like, and then off guard, you'll see, and I'm like, oh, look at my hands are like white knuckles.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to punch the windshield with both hands holding the steering wheel.
Yeah,
like,
but then it was, okay. Continue, please.
So we call him out on that. We just start making fun of Josh and him about it and going the speed limit. I was like, dog, it's like, you can go 10 over here. Like, fucking go, just go a little bit faster. This, and then watching him park the big-ass vehicle under just a tight parking spot. Yeah. There's the rear camera. He has us making fun of him driving. So naturally, he just hates everything right now. And we're like, back up. It's good. Just do it.
So with that, I'll own up there. Like parking then, I've only just started to get used to using cameras. I've still been using the mirrors and stuff. And then, but I'm better. And I remember someone who was very dear to me once, I was parking in the car and then and there was next to a wall and I said, oh, looks like the wall's moving. And she was like, what the fuck? What, the wall's moving? And I was like, no, I said, it looks like the wall's moving. I'm not claiming the wall is moving. I'm like, but that was that. And, but yeah.
So, you got out.
Are you finished?
You got at the way. Hold on, because you had me park the fucking vehicle.
I don't know. You fucking lied.
Someone did. You got out. Remember?
No, no,
yes,
no,
you did.
This
you
should not happen.
You got out of the vehicle.
No, it didn't.
Yes, you did. You got out.
All right, listen.
For the second time in the podcast history, there's about to be a fucking fight breaking out.
No, it's not going to be a fight. It means I'm just going to give someone a beating. And then it's just like.
That's the intro.
I know. I swear to God, you fucking got out. I fucking put this to you now.
I put this to you. That, like, au contraire, is that no one has ever parked a vehicle for me. I think I got out and I joked and said, someone parked the vehicle for me, but I got back in that vehicle and I parked that. Just so, for the record. And I know I'm right, and you're wrong.
That is such a, like, a prison, like, hold my pocket story. Park this vehicle for me.
Yeah. Or I thought more in prison of, like, hold my coffee. Someone's going to get shanked.
So we are very different prisons.
Are you finished now?
Yes, I'm finished.
So here's what really happened. No, because you forgot about the stop signs. Because at that time, I'd been coming to America as, like, on training and stuff, but I hadn't really. That was like the first steps of my journey into becoming a resident here. So again, some of the driving thing was unusual to me. So the stop signs were like, it was either I wouldn't stop because I was like, fuck, I've just gone through a stop sign, or I'd see it about 30 yards away and then slam the brakes on, and, like, everyone would come to the front. So that added a factor to the driving.
So your insurance was very expensive.
Oh, no, it is. Even now, it's super expensive. Like, it is really expensive. Because I just took my Texas driver's test a few weeks ago. Well, it's a few months ago now. And which I felt really sort of an injustice.
Because they really didn't like you driving in the left side.
No,
of the
no,
road.
It's fine. Because legally, you can drive. I can legally, with a British license, you can drive in Texas.
Right.
But it doesn't transfer over. So if you want to get a Texas driver's license, you have to do the test. And I've been driving, and I have to say this, and I've driven all over the world. And the worst drivers in the world, I have to say, without fear of contradiction, are in Texas.
Yeah.
The worst in the world. More than anywhere.
Have you seen my new shirt, Eli?
And this is the thing. So when I went to do the test, I was like, kind of not. I honestly thought, again, and it's credit to the people. I won't say the company because they are really good. Is I went there and I thought, oh, you've been driving here 30 years. Okay. Nod, nod, wink, wink. Because that's what I heard might happen. Is they'll say, yeah, you can drive. We know you can. Just park, drive around the car park and park up. So I turn up in a Porsche. Just put that on there. And then they said, do you want to use your car to drive? I was like, yeah. And I think it's going to be that. And then she says, oh, can you help me with these bollards? And I'm like, all right, we're going to do parallel parking. So we put them into the trunk or the boot. And then we do that. And then she goes, right, you're ready. And then she gives us the rules. This is what we're going to do. If you go 1 mile and over, 1 mile and over the speed limit, it's an instant fail, all this jazz. And I'm like,
wow,
fuck. This is really happening. I'm doing my driving test. So I pull away. We do the driving test, do the parallel parking. I kind of nearly ace it. I drop 1 point for something. And then, but that's the thing. I was in my mind, I was thinking, if I fail this, I will be outraged because saying the worst drivers in the world are out there and you failed me. I didn't. So this gives, and I would not have said, I would not be saying this. I would not be bad mouthing Texans right now. I had not done my driving test, but now I've done it. It qualifies me to say
that is the most British thing I've ever heard.
Holy moly, it's like it's bad. And I know a lot.
You got a license to badmouth this license?
I'm like, I did something really British the other day, like really British, and it was some guy, some douchebag, and I was like, did something, and I was just, you know, when you're, I'm trying to get in that lane, you know, I've got to, and he just like sped up.
Oh yeah,
and it really got to me, so I accelerated in front of him. And then I put the window down, that window, and I put my hand out and made like a wanker sign.
And I was like, that would have so confused me as an American. I'm like, you jerking and off the ghost?
Like, it was like my natural.
Jerking off ghosts out here.
My natural brain was like, you fucking wanker. And I like stopped and I like laughed. And then I was driving to Staccato.
Yo, darling, I was on my way home and Harry Potter just done told me to jerk off.
And there's a good friend of mine, Lily, who works. She's a dear friend of mine, Lily, who works at Staccato. And she was born in the UK. And I said to her, I came in and went, I don't know what came over me. I said, I just done the most British thing ever on the road. So I told her what I did. And she was like laughing, going, she wouldn't have had a clue. She said, whoever you did that to didn't have a clue what you were trying to tell them. So that's fine.
I would have not.
But the point is, yeah. And when I mentioned this to Texans, and like, I live in Texas, I love this state. And as I said it before, it's one of the best things about living in Texas is, you know, I'm just in this country. I haven't been here long, but I do feel superior to everyone else in the country. And
that's going at the beginning.
another thing at the beginning, and then but no, it's good. It's great being in Texas. I love this state. And when I say the story about driving, but it doesn't, as much as I love this state, is one of the things about the driving. I'm like, and then other Texans will say, well, it's because of all the transplants.
You mean Mexicans?
I don't know. It could be anyone. Californians, okay. Probably. and then I do live near Austin, so, you know.
Touche.
And then
bunch of failed actors from LA.
And then, so there's that. But there's those, but this is where, this is the ones who get me, is like the Dooleys.
Oh, you, dang it. I was hoping you got, what were you saying yesterday?
Doubleys or something.
Yeah, you were like, what are they called? The Doubleys?
The Dooleys. The Dooleys. So those Dooley drivers out there, the Dooley drivers, and you see these big Texans, and you can see them with the, I imagine them, they've got their check shirts on, and they've got their, and they're chewing.
You're describing
dip.
Cody right now.
chewing dip. And if they stepped out, they'd have their oversized jeans with their,
there's the same amount of tires, but like double of them.
Yeah. So the Dooleys, and like, it's not, I'm not Captain Jack Sparrow. And then, so you got.
But you have heard of me.
And then you got the Dooley drivers, and then these big, you see these big, big Texans with their check shirts on, and if they step out, they have the oversized jeans with their boots on, with the big belt goggles, and they've got, and straight away I look at them going, you have fucking tiny, tiny, like, hearts.
The smallest heart.
Just and that's what
you're
like.
That's where we thought we were.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. It's just like, and I, that's what I call the little, the big little Texans.
The big little Texans?
Yeah, like big men with big little men.
Cody, do you have a belt buckle on right now?
I have a fact.
He's a man of his word, and his girth. What did they? What have I heard? You're a man of your worth. You're man of your word and your girth.
But do you have a big bell buckle on right now?
No.
Damn it! We have King Trout over here. He's like just the biggest belt buckle.
And just so we say, it's more about Dooleys rather than belt buckles. And I am going to do it on the Ministry of Defence. We are probably going to do a belt buckle.
Yes.
So send me belt buckle.
I would rock one of those. Yeah. All day long.
Oh, we all would rock one of those, dude. Yeah.
Now this, okay. So going through your terrible driving.
Wow.
Ki-ki-ki. Boom.
You're a funny guy.
But
Eli's either trying to hit on you or get you to kill him. Yeah, I'm not
either
sure
or
which.
Both. The driving segue leads into your drive to, well, your born identity driving to the event, but leading up, you had a gentleman in a business suit that you've never experienced before, leading up to the countdown of the day. Can you go into, you will see, this is fucking mind-blowing shit, like mind-blowing
shit. This sounds like Craigslist classified, so I'm not really sure what you're talking about.
Yeah, where are we going, Eli?
Watch.
So I think the story is, I've told it before on different podcasts and things, is so most people know that the reason why I'm sat here now is because I intervened into a terrorist incident in 2019, which was the most remarkable day of my life and something I felt I'd been training for since the moment I was born. And that morning of the attack, I was living in Africa. And I was doing my own bit of shooting, finished my training, my own training, and then was driving back into the city. I was driving my pickup truck, and then as I was going towards the city, there's what I call the main, but it's like a dirt track. I pulled onto a dirt track. On this dirt track it was common to see Maasai tribesmen or workmen working on the Chinese rail link. So it was weird for me when I pulled out there to see this short black guy wearing a smart business suit and highly polished shoes walking down the track. And then something compelled me, against all procedures, against common sense, I don't pick up hitchhikers. I stopped the car and went, "Hey, do you want a lift?" And he comes running over, "Oh, thank you so much," gets in the car. So then we start driving, and he said to me straight away, he said, "What's your name?" I'm like, "I'm Chris." He tells me his name. And then he said, "Well, how old are you?" I'm like, "I'm 43. That's how old I was at the time. He's like, I'm 43 too. When were you born?" I was like, "September." He's like, "I'm born in September. I don't know what day, but what day were you born?" I was like, "September 15th. He's like, "This is a good sign. In September 1975, you and I were both born." Says some other stuff that I don't really recall, then reaches into his pocket, pulls out this long like dagger. I don't feel any threat whatsoever. Feel completely chill about it. And is like, and I joke and said, "You're not going to kill me with that." And this is like a long curved dagger with a double tip, unusual looking thing. And he's like, "No, I carry this when I walk down this road in case I come across any evil spirits or demons." And then he chuckles to himself, puts it away. I then turn to him and say, "Judging by how you're dressed, I take it you're going into the city." He's like, "No." He goes, "Drop me off at the first village we come to. Don't go inside the village. Drop me off before we get into it. Remember, this is in Africa." So it's like a mud huts, Wrigley tin.
Tribes.
And so we come to this village. I said, "This village is yes." So I bring the vehicle to a stop. He then opens the door and steps out. As he steps out of the door, everything changes. His foot hits the ground. And as soon as his foot hits the ground, his face changes. And when I mean changes, it's still the same person, but it's a bit like if I insulted you badly. And you're like, "What?" His face changed. He's like, "Chris." And then his voice changed. And it wasn't, the way I described it is, it was quiet but loud, and I could hear it everywhere. So it wasn't as if he was just coming from one direction. It was everywhere around me, and I could feel it in my heart vibrating. He's like, "Chris, may God bless you many times this day." And then all of a sudden, snaps out of it. And he's like, "Oh, thank you so much, thank you so much." And then closes the door, and I drive off. And for the record, about 150 yards down the road, I look in the mirror, can't see him again. And I kind of thought about it a little bit then, but I didn't think about that much. But 30 hours later, after the most remarkable day of my life, before I'd even left the complex, his words were echoing in my mind going, "Wow, and that was, where did that come from? Who was that message from?"
Fucking crazy. Like, that started the countdown of after that event, so, how much longer
so
before?
So that would have been roughly about 10:30, 11 a.m. And then the terrorist attack happened at 3:30 or 3:27. And then, so the clock was ticking from then. And everything after that was perfect. In my life, I've always said it, that I always considered myself unlucky to a certain point. And if someone had said, "On your watch, this terrorist is going to attack, it is going to happen," and then I would say, "Oh, that's going to be the day I'm going to be out of country, or I'm going to be doing something else and not get involved with it." But actually, everything from that moment was perfect for the next days. It was, everything was second perfect, because after that, I went and got my haircut. Then I went to lunch, had Moroccan beef for lunch and a dour cocktail. Then I went home and had a shower. And the moment I stepped out of the shower, put my jeans on, that's when the phone rang. Tell me that someone was saying, "Hey, there's a terrorist attack going on."
No shit. So you had a cocktail, you just took your shower, and you're like,
"Yeah." Went to lunch. Well, got a haircut. Then went to a bar that I used to going to all the time. Really great place. And got lunch. Had a cocktail with it. Drove home. Got in the shower. Did some chores first. Got in the shower. Stepped out of the shower. Put my jeans on. Put a t-shirt on. Phone rang. Looked at the phone, wasn't going to answer it initially, then thought, "To hell with it, I'll answer it." And then it was a friend of mine who was in the complex saying, "There's a terrorist attack going on. There's a complex terrorist attack going on at 14 Riverside Drive. You need to get down here."
So you weren't in the area?
I was close to it. I lived, luckily, I, again, everything is it chance or not? Yes. It was, I lived fairly close to the area.
So this is the story that I heard over and over, like, just tells you how, like, media disseminates information. I always was told that you were there. You just happened to be there, but you actually heard about it and decided to go in.
Yeah, and that's when I jumped in the pickup truck and then drove there.
And then what was the drive like leading up to, like, hey, getting there? Because we were talking about it earlier.
Is the thing. It's like when I get in there, I hadn't been living there long, so I didn't even know where it was. So I put it on Google Maps. Where is it? Distance, not that far. And again, I'm trying not to give away people where people live and stuff. So it's, but the distance, I did that drive on a Tuesday afternoon, which when it was after the event, and it took me over an hour to get there.
Whoa.
On a normal day when the whole city's coming to a halt, it took me 15 minutes to get there on the day. And I used my advanced driving techniques that I'd been taught. And then I was like driving on the sidewalk. I was going in and out. And the thing about advanced driving or high speed pursuit driving, as it's called in the police, is it's not about driving fast. Part of it is, but it's about knowing when to make the move and when not to make the move, when to go for it, the gaps to see, because everyone can drive fast, sort of, but that's when you're going to get killed or kill someone else, which is never good. So it's...
So this is the basic 101 San Antonio driving course.
Get there, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's just get there. Don't get
now
there.
Now parallel
don't,
park.
Get there and don't get there. Don't die. And that's what it was. And it was just so. I was driving high speed, getting as fast as I could get there because as it developed, and I kind of sensed it at the time. But what was happening was every second counted. Every second counted. So I had to get there as fast as I could because this collapsing timeline.
And then what? So what? You were describing it to us. Music. Popped on during the
The funny story is it was like, again, it's an extreme drive. I'm driving there, I'm trying to call people, trying to let people know success. Part of that thing is trying to get in touch with people. I'm turning up the volume because I don't know if I can hear them or not, but I'm driving for my life. I'm driving like I've got to get there, but I'm not going to kill anyone and I'm not going to kill myself.
Not till you get there.
And then but somehow I had this, because it was a new truck, and I had a classical music playlist. And somehow I engaged with the music going into the phone.
You're on like fucking hold music.
And no. It's more than that. It's better. Then I click and all of a sudden this music starts blaring. And because I'm like got two hands on the wheel trying to like drive, I'm not going to mess around trying to turn this off. And all of a sudden Vivaldi's Summer starts blaring through the music. And I'm doing these movers like going in between trucks and like everything. It's like, and there's a certain point, there's the comedy of it. I start laughing because I'm thinking this. I'm living in my own movie here.
See, you've forever formed an anchor to that song for the rest of your life.
That song that royalty free? Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah. Editor, fucking put it up, dog, because it's royalty free.
He already has. He's been doing it since he mentioned it.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, and that's the that was playing it. So it's a good soundtrack into that. And it was just like I was laughing, going, "This is I'm like living in my own movie."
You are the main character. That's what your Casey Neistat said.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, I was talking to Casey Neistat earlier, and he was like, "Bro, you're hanging out with the main character." I'm hanging out with the main character today. But what kills me about that too is just like you want to go into the Texas DMV and be like, "I know how to drive," and they're like, "Do you know how to drive?"
Yeah.
You've only gone through every fucking course in the world to know how to defensively and offensively drive.
Like, meanwhile, they give a license to every post-quinceañera citizen of San Antonio.
Yeah. And I got to admit, though, when they said, when she put the ballards out to Parallel Park, my heart was like picked up a bit. I'm going, because like, I was on a Parallel Park now, but I didn't realize how big the space is when you do your driver's test in Texas.
That
parking space is not a real life parking space. It's like as if you're parking trip like an 18 wheeler. That's probably what you'd put in there. Not a.
No, it's literally a football field. They're like, now parallel park. It's like two cars on 100 miles per hour. You're like, okay,
yeah.
And did I pass?
Yeah, yeah.
Good job.
But it was good, and that's fine, and I'm glad.
Yeah. What was the second song that came on?
The second after, so first song came on, that finished, then the second song came on, and then I'd reached my destination. The second song was I'm not sure if it's pronouncing this right, Dance Macabre,
another classical piece.
It was a classical playlist that I had, And that the second one that came on was Dance Macabre.
And for anyone out there, when we're saying he was like Christian was driving, fucking, you're like going in between vehicles, you're going on the curb, you have closing gaps, and you're like fucking gun it, going through this shit.
So that was the second song. So and then I'd reached my destination. So
now the fucking you kicked open the door, you grab your kit, you're throwing it on. Mm-hmm. And are they coming to you first with the information, or how?
No? There's no one there. It's like it's quiet. And we're not. I thought the whole idea of this podcast was not to talk about the incident, but
I know. All had the fucking rules of engagement from the very beginning, but here we are.
But some of these were like even these.
No, and that's the thing is, I drove into the area, saw the burning cars. There's cars that had been set on fire by hand grenades. Used that as a demarcation line. Okay, I'm not going to go further than those cars. Parked up. Threw some kit on, not the kit. I had more kit in my car, but I threw that kit on to look official and then see what's going on. And then ran, cantered forward to the entryway to the complex to see what was happening. And then the rest is history.
And it's leading
Jesus
up to
Christ.
That.
Yo, hand grenades set shit on fire? I thought it was more fragmentation.
I mean, whatever, but they were throwing grenades or something. And originally people thought it was a car bomb.
It was like a diversion.
But it wasn't intentional. It was just they were throwing grenades and shooting at people and things. And somehow the cars had set on fire.
Jeez.
You want to bring
it up?
No, I won't, because there's like the information.
Eli, is there any other PTSD at this table that you would love to just delve into?
I extract all your PTSD right now. No, it's the information on like your, like the religious things on, because you had like the feelings inside it. It's not like the event itself happened. You've told that story a million times. It is the feelings and stuff that you've not touched base on. You're like, okay, like when you were singing the song, like, hey, like right now, hey, this is about to happen. Or what was the feelings in there? Those little, like, I know Shane was talking about it. It's like you had these little like moments you would look around and you're like, whoa, this is like, it's more of a religious experience.
Because to add to it for that, like the story I was always told, like from somebody on the outside looking in, just from headlines, you were a guy who was there and did the right thing. Mm.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that was a conscious choice you had to make, and you had to go out and seek that out.
I think the bottom line is, without going into the detail of the incident itself, is I went there because I heard it was going on, and at the same point I heard a woman scream, and then I heard a burst of gunfire, and and the scream just got cut off in mid-scream, and I went, in my mind I was like, she's just been murdered. And I turned to them and say, right, I'm going in, and then the rest is history.
The rest is history. And then you have...
And then 22 hours later, I walked out of it.
And there's all those religious...
22 hours.
Yeah.
So, 22 hours later, I then walked out. The incident was done by then, but I wasn't just in, out. It was... And then what I did in between is that's between me. I mean, lots of people know, because I briefed a lot of people, police, military. There's people out there. Everyone knows, so... I'm sure eventually people are going to be talking to people and saying, hey, what happened? And saying, well, we've heard the full brief and we know exactly what happened, what he did, who he talked to, his role in this whole incident. It's not for me to talk about right now, but the information is out there. And I'm sure, like I say, we see information, we see videos, we see things that I have no control over coming out all the time.
And as
more time goes on, people are looking for these people saying, hey, were you in the police or were you in the military and had a brief by Christian Craighead about what he did? Yes. You know what he did here? And went, oh, yeah, this is when he did this, and this is when he did this bit, and this is this bit. So this was all authorized when I was in the military, but that information is out of my control and out there. But I could sit here and tell you the whole incident and they'd just be upset with me. But I'm sure that information will come out on its own.
And that's why
I would never like ask you to divulge that information here of all places, but it shows how much there's a discrepancy between the public, I guess, the public idea of what happened versus what actually happened. Because in my mind, from just somebody that like has been reading headlines, I think of this whole incident as taking place over maybe 2-3 hours.
Yeah, and that's
like 24-hour period. That's crazy.
Yeah, 20. I mean, I was briefing some guys in the U.S. military unit, and that was the big thing. They were like, "What the?" Because again, from their thought, they just thought it was one building that I'd ran into and helped and saved some people.
Yeah,
the whole scale of it is pretty epic. And again, it's not for me to disclose, to talk about it now. But if people hear the full story, and I'm sure, like I say, I'm sure it will come out through people who've heard my story before. They'll be like, "Holy moly, that was quite badass." And I'm thankful I was there. And that's the thing. And every single evening I pray, and I'm thankful, and I always give thanks for that. I was there for that moment.
Like what Sarah says all the time is, you know, be the someone.
Exactly.
If you're, if in absence of it, be the somebody.
And that's why I say is you're it. Sometimes, and I've said it lots of times, is the whole world is coming around, down around you, and you look and you're waiting for help to come, and then you realize you are the help. Mm. And it's like, well, I guess we better get on with it.
And then people fell in line after because they see you. You might have those fierce hesitations we talked about in the car. You're like, you get excited for like, you're like, okay, the gunfire started. This is what I was designed for. This is what I've worked towards. This is what I'm training for.
And that's the thing. And again, it's like not taking any, like there's people, like in every situation, people do things and people don't do things. And I'm not going to be this dickhead who's going to stand and go, yeah, I'm the man and I'm alpha male and I did everything and blah, blah. I didn't. I did do it.
You reacted.
You are legitimately one of the most low-key motherfuckers.
The humble dude is humble.
But like I said, we've known each other for a good minute, and you are never that guy.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I think maybe the reason for that is because I don't need to be, and that's why again it's my thing, and I don't want to go into this veteran shaming or whatever. But it's these guys who are like
the loud ones,
lifting boats and shit like that.
Yeah,
I mean that probably.
And
that's why I wanted to do this interview podcast is like, do I want to be this super serious guy all the time? It's not because I'm Chris Craighead. It's because sometimes I'm kind of funny. I'm a normal guy. I will fuck you up if you cross me, but otherwise I'm not going to be this guy going, oh yeah, talk to Chris Craighead, super intense.
God, you would not be on this podcast if you were like that.
But, I would have hung out with you once, and I'd be like,
"Do you know the other old saying? Someone said I was intense once, so I stared at them till they apologized."
I would apologize, but I'm sorry, bro.
Well, that's one thing that I've always said, like even just like from our experiences at SHOT Show, like you know, Chris Craighead, oh, he's done this, he's done that. I'm like, dude, he's always just been like the nicest fucking guy. Like you've always just been very down to earth. You've never been like, oh, well, I'm this person. You've just always been just a real fucking human.
And I think the people who are there going, yeah, like I'm Chris Craighead, or I'm this guy who did this, and I'm SAS or Delta Force or SEAL Team 6 or that, and giving it big chest pumps and yeah, be the deadliest man in the room and be hard to kill or whatever. It's like, you are so insecure. Mm. That just stinks of insecurity. It's like, yeah, I'm all of that and more. But I don't need to keep reminding you of it. And it's like that saying, isn't it? Is if you keep on saying you're an alpha male, it's probably a good indication that you're not an alpha male.
I'll do it 100%. All right, I gotta ask a question. What do you do in your free time, man? What's your like go-to relaxation to get away from like your head thoughts, like the shit that you've gone through?
I think the biggest thing like now is I go shooting.
Yeah,
but no, yeah. I do.
Well, you know, I know some people in San Antonio, if you ever want to do that.
You know. We got one or two guns.
I mean, for me, physical exercise has always been a massive, like even last night, I think we talked about earlier, that I'd be looking at some things on social media and I was like all angst and all angry and I was going to send some messages to people and I was like, oh, burn it down. And then I had a good night's sleep, good workout in the morning, and then I was like all chipper. I'm like, oh, how's everything going?
Yeah.
And that's the big difference. And that's a big difference. And then, riding motorbikes really like sorts me out. Riding motorbikes fast, shooting guns and skydiving. Yeah. They're things that really like bring me down to a level. And I don't do that. I don't, this riding motorbikes and skydiving, I don't do as much as I should, but I still do it. And to me, they're a big source of like focus and,
relaxation and that reset for you.
I mean, the motorbike thing, and this is not a shameless plug or whatever, but I kind of want to say it because plug I think away, it's a good dog. Story is I had this when I was living in Salt Lake City. I woke up and I was like, I had this dream and I just woke up and I was like, I need to get a motorbike. I'd been riding, I used to ride a motorbike all the time.
Joseph Smith part two.
And I was like,
I got a religion.
And then
450 cc's of religion, brother.
So then I thought, right, get a bike. So get up straight away and look on the top laptop, and I'm like on the MacBook and going motorbike. Like, and I was thinking about getting a Triumph Scrambler, but straight away I'm going, like, I've always had a thing with Ducatis. Yeah. So I go Ducati and look at Ducati Scrambler, and I'm like, oh well, they look pretty cool. Ducati dealership, Salt Lake City, and I just jump straight in my truck and go straight there. Turn up at I think it's Euro Motorsports in Salt Lake. And I'm like, hey, I'm just like looking and see this Ducati Scrambler right there and going, wow, that's pretty sexy. And at that point, I hadn't ridden a bike in 8 years. And so I go in there and I told the guy, I'm saying, look, I'm just looking, had this like crazy thought about getting a motorbike again. Don't know why. I'm looking at getting a Scrambler. You know, I want to see what the available. Remember, this is 2022. So like vehicles is hot, they're hard to come by.
Oh yeah, expensive.
So I'm thinking, is it going to be like, so my question to him is basically going to say, if I put my lame down for now, am I likely to get one in like 2 years time or yeah. something like that? And he just looks and went, well, funny you should say that. We've just had two delivered right now. One of them's already been sold. If you make a decision in the next 15 minutes, you can have it. And I'm like, I didn't think it was going to be this soon. And I was like, I was like, to hell with it. Yeah, I'll take it. So I then got a Ducati right there. And then it got delivered a few days later.
I'm so jealous.
And then so the gets turned up.
I've wanted a Scrambler for a minute.
So the Ducati Scrambler turns up with Black Rifle. I got it delivered at Black Rifle in Salt Lake. And I'm there and I'm like, kind of like, apprehensive because 8 years since I've ridden. And I must say that motorbikes seem to be a lot easier to ride now than what they used to be. Get on it and like, holy moly, this is great. But then I said to my friend, Phil Reed Jr. is the managing director of Ducati, and he's a great guy. But I told him this story because this is a thing. So bearing in mind, I've been retired for 2 years, but I've been in lockdown because of that 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and then we
that's what we call below the radar.
Flatten the curve.
And then, I get on this motorbike to ride home in from Black Rifle Coffee to where I was living in Sugar House. Is it Sugar House in?
Yep.
Yeah, and Sugar House in Salt Lake. That's where I was living. And then I get on this motorbike and I pull away and I'm riding down the road. I start crying because I'm like, and I said to Phil, I was like, this is this feeling that I've got of, you know, like the thrill, whether it be the thrill of danger. I mean, you see me ride, it's probably thrill of danger because I'm not very good. but I'm like, because I max it out, but I'm like caning it down this road and it's just the freedom, the noise, you know, like the noise of the bike, the noise of the air, the feeling of the air around you, this like sense of real freedom on a motorbike that you don't get I don't think you get in a car. And I'm just like, I haven't felt this way for a good few years. And I start like crying, not like bawling, but you know, like this emotional, yeah. Like, yeah, this is what it's about.
Fucking, it's a feeling.
It's just like good. And that's why I've got such a, I think there's a, like motorbikes, it's just such a, like a, it's just a thing. And yeah, I think, yeah, and those it. Who,
thanks,
and
Chris, and I'm buying one tomorrow.
Yeah, and those who don't ride, like, it's this thing, if you've ever thought about, if you look, it doesn't matter how old you are, whether you've been like thinking about it, I urge you just to get on one. And even, dare I say it, it's not very manly, but even if you know someone who's got one and get on the back of them, you will see what I mean. You will feel that feeling.
I ride with Brandon all the time.
Yeah. No, genuinely, like,
in the sidecar.
No, in the back. I just hold him. Yeah, he wraps around my tummy. It's, you know, it's a whole thing. No, and genuinely, like that, when I first moved to Texas years ago, that was an experience. We were at brunch, and at one point I just said, like, man, I miss riding motorcycles. Yeah. I fucking miss it.
It's a sense of freedom, I think. Yeah. It's weird. It's like people, you don't get it. And I know it's like a cliche thing, but you don't get it until you feel it. And then you feel it and go, I know exactly what you
understand. No, because it was that day I left brunch. I went to a motorcycle dealership that was close to where we went to brunch at the time. I bought a bike and I still have it in my garage, and maybe Connor might fucking grab it one day.
Supposed to.
I bought 3 bikes in Texas since then. I fucking love it. I really do. I genuinely enjoy it.
Boom! The year's 2024. Do you know what that means? A new look for you. Manscaped has the 5.0 Lawnmower Ultra. That's right. The Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is a man's cheat code to looking good, feeling good, and have all the confidence. Whether you're looking to maintain a trim or make sure everything's gone, this has you covered. Trusted by 10 million men worldwide. I actually use this. I endorse this. I use all their products. Equipped with 2 skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little bit off the top, and a new foil blade to take everything off comfortably. And for the dudes out there that want a full grooming experience, look no further than Manscaped's Performance Package 5.0. In that grooming kit, you get the trusted lawnmower, Manscaped's ears and nose hair trimmers, and essential aftercare products with the Crop Soother Ball Aftershave Lotion and Crop Preserver Anti-Chafing Ball Deodorant. Head over to manscaped.com and use code UNSUB and get yourself 20% off and free shipping. Oh, I love free shipping. Make your balls and your spouse happy.
It's really crazy for me because, like, I thought I had a decent understanding of the incident, and I'm realizing now the more we talk, like, that I just had no fucking clue.
And that's I think the tragedy of it all is, again, it's not self-gratification or whatever. It's a good story. Mm. But when people hear it, they're like, even the toughest audience in the world, which are tier one operators who I brief this to, they're like, what? This is, like, badass. Because most of the time when people hear things of like historical incidents, they're going, oh, I thought he did a lot more. It wasn't as busy as that. Or, but with that's the opposite of mine. When people hear what happened, they're like,
yeah,
that's badass.
For reference, without giving away anything, it's like how many you were injured on this mission?
No.
You didn't get injured on this one? Oh, you fuck. I suck at my job. I got shot doing nothing. Fuck, dog. You're in like close quarters. I'm out in the open and I get shot.
I got shot in the open. So I got shot in the open before that. Yeah.
Well, it's just fucking interesting, you know, because like you have a certain perception of it. You think of like, okay, this thing went down 7 seconds late or 7 minutes later. It's all over.
Yeah,
I had no idea this took place over a day. And the thing again,
and there's quite conveniently all the video footage has been taken down, so that's fine. And you know, like I say, haters are going to hate. I've heard that before, no problem. So I meet him. I'm then going somewhere else in London. I get in a cab, a black cab, and I'm driving in this cab. And London black cab drivers are like the salt of the earth. They're good guys. They know the city, and they're normally good chat as well.
When you see a black cab, what do you
like?
Do you know the
black London taxis?
No, we have no idea.
Yeah. What have you not seen any movie?
Had low credit score.
So in New York City, you got yellow cabs.
Yeah.
In London, you have the black cabs, and they're like licensed. Drivers.
Gotcha.
And they're normally great chat. They know the city, and they've got to be licensed, and they've got to do a really rigorous testing to have that to be able to drive that cab. And he's talking to me, and I'm looking in. He's in the mirror, and he's like, "I don't know how you're here for." And then he goes, "I think I know you." And he's like, "He goes, are you in the military?" And I said, "Oh, I'm ex-military." And he goes, "What were you in?" I said, "Oh, because I was in a unit called the SAS." And he goes, "You're that guy from Kenya," and I was like, "Yeah, I am." And he's like, "Oh, like," and he starts. He's like in tears. He went, "I can't believe you're in my cab." Like, I goes, "Gotta say, you are like everything, all my friends, everyone, we all love you. You are like what this country should be about, what it used to be about. I'm so proud." He goes, "Can I call my friend? My friend's like one of your biggest fans. He'd love it that I'm in your cab." So we try to call it. I said, "Yeah," and I'm laughing, going, "Yeah, call your friend." Calls his friend. He doesn't answer. And he goes, "Look, I just want to say on behalf of the country, like you are what makes Great Britain great. We love you." And I went, "Oh, thanks a lot, mate." And he goes, "You don't understand what that means to me at this moment in time." Because at that time, I was going through like the darkest of days. And in light of, again, what my friend, the actor, just told me about senior diplomats. And it's interesting, that's what you get. This is, you get the two sides. You get the, like I say, this officer class or the established upper class going, "Oh, he shouldn't have done what he did. It's not his place. He could have messed things up." Versus the working class going, You are what makes Great Britain great. That's, we love you for that." And that's one, and that's the whole thing that I hope I put this across to people. And I'm quite anti UK. I, and for the record, I'm working to be a US citizen. I'm not interested in being a dual citizen. I want to do full US citizen because I'm turning my back on the on my country that I fought for and did everything for.
They turned your back on you though first.
Yeah, and but I think the other thing as well, but here's the interesting thing. In light of this was one of the things I was concerned about. Again, I think a lot more about what people think about me than I should do. And I thought, given the people who follow me are kind of patriotic about the war on terror and about that kind of stuff, and no one's ever said, you're a traitor for like wanting to be American, blah, blah, blah. You know, your fight's here, you should be a British citizen. Overwhelmingly, I've never heard anyone say that. They're all saying, I wish I could get out if I could. This country's fallen. Good for you for getting to America.
You've genuinely made me a more patriotic American just in the 2 hours we've had.
And that's the viewpoint of the usual working class of the UK. They're not saying, you should stay in UK, you should be a better UK person. Your fight here, they're going, good for you for getting out when you can. Because this country's fallen.
You've done and how you stood up. It's like we were talking earlier, all of us come from, none of us grew up well-to-do. We grew up in, like, I lived in a 700 square foot with 7 people, like tiny house. Cody, trailer, yeah. Brandon, small house.
Born to a 1-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, we all grew up poor, and then all of us has made this different. We all did different walks in lives, but everyone just, the end goal was like, hey, I have this dream, I have this ambition. Yours was SAS, and you fucking crushed it. Cody's was, hey, military police officer, and then you're like, I'm going to do YouTube, and you fucking crush it. Brandon, same. Brandon was supposed to be a lawyer. He dropped out of fucking law school. He's like, no, I am pursuing YouTube, and I'm going to make this fucking work. And he is crushing it. And then he was like, I want to do Congress. Blah. And now he's crushing that, unfortunately.
Unfortunately is a good word.
But that's the thing is, it's just, but I mean, going back onto it, it's just a tale of, you know, like, life's complex and everyone's had their views, but it's just a shame of that, again, of the establishment, and that's what it is the old bit always comes back to the establishment. And, you know, I think it's fairly, like, do I support President Trump? Yes. The reason why I support him is because, like I've said this before on the podcast, I met President Trump, and he thanked me, and he was like, and the first thing out of his mouth was, thank you for saving American lives. Mm. No one from the British government has ever thanked me for doing what I did that day.
That's crazy.
And then... But to me, is when I met President Trump, there was nothing in it for him. That's what I keep on saying to people. Doesn't matter if you support Trump or not support, if you think he's whatever or not.
Yeah. You can have your own viewpoint.
Is the point of, from a human perspective, is that when I met him, it was in his private study in the White House. There was no media there. The British government did not know I was there. No one knew I was there. And someone just told him and said, hey, that guy that did that thing is in the White House, and he said, well, I want to meet him. And that's like an abbreviated story. And the first thing he said was, thank you for saving American lives.
Fuck.
If there's no one there to hear that, then that kind of, to me, it proves that it kind of came from the heart. It's 100%. Not the thing. It's not like, hey, make sure you hear me say that. He said it to me, and no one else heard that other than the people in that room. So that kind of says something about his feelings about on the incident, at least. And the reason why I think people do not like, again, it's down to the establishment. Like, you know, was Trump born wealthy? Yes, but he wasn't born into that class, if that makes sense, if people don't know that. And maybe I'm speaking offhand here, and maybe I'm speaking out of lane, and maybe you should research this yourselves, but it's like there's a difference between you can be born rich but not in the establishment, and you can be born poor but still in the establishment. And look after their own, so to speak. And if you're not part of their gang, you know that you're not part of the gang. So that's that.
Damn, you are just.
You're probably my favorite podcast guest we've ever had,
dude. This is what I want to put that out there, dude. This I'm in a lot of some words of how good this fucking is, because you are just so well spoken. You are humble to a degree I'm not used to, like. It is an amazing thing, and it's awesome to share your story, everything to the community, because it's proof that you don't have to be an arrogant asshole. You don't have to do any of that. Just chase whatever dream you are, and then be humble during that journey. And life is going to throw fucking speed bumps at you, but persevere, step up. You're going to have dark times. You've discussed multiple dark times. I don't know how openly, but you still didn't give up during those. You PTSD, we all, like, it's those experiences that we've all have, and some more than others, but you didn't let that end you or your career or your lifestyle. You're like, no, I'm going to fucking keep going. I'm going to keep pushing on. And I'm going to set the example of how dudes should be, because we all at this table
were saying, fuck it. Dollar for dollar, you're probably somebody that I personally know that has done the most, who has talked about it the least.
I think one of the things, like, I'm super proud of this children's book, and this is not a plug. I'm just
plug the fuck out.
No, plug it, dude.
This plug the fuck out.
I wrote this
only 2 hours after I spilled White Claw.
I'm not going to talk about how this book came about and all the rest, but it's the children's book I wrote. But one of
what's the name of it?
The Wrong Wolf.
There we go.
And but the thing that I like, I mean, there's lot. All of it is me. None of it was edited. The only editor was my dear friend Denise. She did like a grammar edit. But it was, it's all from my heart. So how it's written, how it's worded is me. And she just did the grammar edit. One of the things I get to it's kind of a biography, but it represents everyone in life, but it's the dedication. And this book is dedicated to all the wolves living in the wrong pack.
And this is the one thing I was like, Connor, this is a really good statement. Before the podcast started, I read that. I was like, holy shit, this is probably one of my favorite statements I've ever read.
And what is the statement?
This book is dedicated to all the wolves living in the wrong pack. Mm. And then the whole moral of the story is, it doesn't matter how or when you're born, how or where you're born, that doesn't determine where you end up in life.
It's such a true statement. It's just, if you're an individual, you can be in the wrong pack. You just have to rise above and go on your own or build a new pack. That's why I think with this group, you are part of this pack. You can lead it if you want. We're fine with it. I'm sure they all agree. Yeah. But it is.
And if you feel like wherever you want to lead us, we'll just go along with it because we're scared.
Wherever you want. Why are we naked? Uh-oh.
Why are we carrying the boats, Chris?
why are we covered in bats? Who's gonna carry the boats? Watching what? Harry Potter.
This is weird.
Seriously, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me on. And
seriously, brother, it has been an honor and a privilege to have you on. This has been an amazing, like, this is probably easily one of my favorite episodes.
Yes, absolutely.
Should we give some shout outs? Two shout outs.
Two
shout outs to Eli in Georgetown, my friend Eli.
I like your name.
No, remember, we spoke to him on the phone.
Oh, yeah, holy shit.
Yeah, so yes. He's a good friend of mine, and I love his whole family. I won't show their surnames for security, but the whole family get on with them. But when I was mentioned about, I'm thinking of doing this, I'm going to do this unsubscribe. And I completely watch it. So I called you, and then he was like blown away. And again, that was good for me to say, like that was the, all right, people actually watch this.
That was and the dude. Like, that text you like, are you busy? I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. Why is
and then,
Chris?
About that.
Yeah, like, Chris texted me on FaceTime. I was like, oh, hey, what's up?
And so young Eli for giving a subscriber, and to Ace from Lucchese in, like, I went to the store yesterday and I was looking around and Ace, so if you're watching, you should do, because he's a subscriber. And he said, what are you doing here? I said, oh, I'm doing a podcast and unsubscribe. And he goes, oh, I'm a subscriber and blah, blah, blah. So I'll give you a shout out. So, and he was a great guy in the shop. And
dude, just like that.
I need a new pair of boots, so I might go down there.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, it's only I don't want to say these $1,000 pair of boots, but
they're nice ass boots. They better be
$5,000 pair of boots, goddamn.
But these are the cheapest ones, I think. But
Shit, I'm not going to Lucchese. Ariat's good by me.
Lucchese boot better give me a blow job.
That's anyway, a down payment right there.
If you're watching this still, if we haven't had this bit out, it's did a great job. Everyone else, Lucchese boots, they're really nice. They're comfy. They're good. They look good. I'm not being sponsored by them at all.
No.
But maybe I will be. But
after this.
But with Brandon, Branson Cognac, Armani Jeans, anyone else we can name drop in their Black Rifle Coffee and whoever else.
We're just making sure we get that AdSense revenue up. Real estate, mortgage banking,
money,
Federal
Bitcoin.
Reserve.
Isn't that the manager of Wrexham Football Club? Right?
Yeah.
Wrexham Football Club, anyone NFL. Else? Isn't that, oh, sorry. I rephrase that, everyone. Wrexham Soccer Club and
SAS, State Secrets.
We're just like plugging everything.
Yeah, the MOD, like my MOD, not your MOD, and then all that jazz.
I fucking love it. Cody,
do the beauty. Close us out, you beautiful son of a gun.
Thank you guys for joining the Unsubscribe Podcast. I didn't talk much, but we have Eli Double Fab, we have Christian Craighead, we have Brandon Herrera, and myself, Donut Operator. Thank you so much for listening to whatever the fuck we do here.
And then, Mr. Christian, where can we find you? Website, fucking shirt, plug the shit.
Yeah, I mean, check out my I'm shadow banned all the time on Instagram, but it's. So you have to
welcome to the party, pal.
So you have to type in Christian_Craighead, press search, and then the bottom of the list, the one with the blue tag, that's me. So that's where you go. So don't type in. I think one of my fake accounts has got like 12,000 followers or something. But yeah, Christian_Craighead, the one with the blue tick, that's me.
And is this on Amazon?
No, it's not on Amazon. So go to bookbaby.com.
And you're about to launch a new website?
Yes, and my company is called the Ministry of Defense, and that's on on Instagram, and it's on the internet, and that's where you can buy all the merch, and you'll be able to buy copies of The Wrong Wolf, but they'll be all individually signed by me. And not only will you be able to buy merchandise, but as the company develops, if you want to do one-on-one training or any training, if you're from a special mission unit or anything, this is where you're going to go to if you want to do any firearms or combat training with me, then you can find me there.
Do you have any experience in that?
A little bit. I saw some on TV, as they say.
I've watched Die Hard.
Fuck, yeah.
Hey guys, thank you so fucking much. And then stay tuned for the after show. We will do a 10-minute segment just hanging out with our boy. We got some good who we had crushes on. Can't wait for this.
We're gonna talk about girls.
Woo, vagina.